Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 10th of March, recording at 9:39 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, as I'm not going to be in the office tomorrow, Owen will be doing comment of the day and the Friday audio, I thought I would do the big picture long-term outlook in tonight's audio. So, first off, I am, as you know, very much of the view that Wall Street is in a secular bear market, long defined here as a generational long process of P/E ratio contraction and rising yields. I have also emphasized the importance of Wall Street's overall influence on other markets, and I have often described it as having a leash effect. Now, in comment of the day, there was an excellent letter which referred to a collar, and I said, no, I don't identify that term I have, or description I have talked about, the leash effect, as in a retractable leash that if you are a dog walker, or if you have a dog, you probably got a retractable leash, and so you'll know exactly what I mean by that. Now, in terms of the Wall Street leash effect, what I have said over and over again, and will repeat here, because I think this is the really important point as far as I'm concerned, that as long as Wall Street is steady, let alone rising, then there's a lot of play in the leash. In other words, other markets, stock markets around the world, can do extremely well based on their own particular circumstances and investor psychology in terms of those markets. And the ones that will do best, I feel, during that period will be emerging markets. Again, this is when Wall Street is steady, let alone rising. Emerging markets, I think, against that background, will do exceptionally well. And I think the resources sectors will do exceptionally well because they're basically overall, I believe, in secular bull markets. Now, on the other hand, if Wall Street takes serious fright. Now, we haven't seen that for a while. It's been over 2 years. It's been just 2 years ago since we last saw a major sell-off on Wall Street. Now, when that next occurs, and my fear is that that could be relatively soon, but let me deal with the other point. When we next see a significant sell-off on Wall Street, I feel that the leash effect means that that leash will be retracted, in other words, drawn in, and that it will drag most other stock markets around the world downwards. And if it's a big, sharp fall on Wall Street, I think it will absolutely drag all the other stock markets down. And some of the emerging markets that have done best, and indeed some of the developed markets that have done best, considerably outperforming Wall Street, would in all probability get the biggest overall corrections. That's why I place such store by what I see Wall Street doing, in addition to other lead markets and sectors around the globe. Now, I'm sure if you've been listening to the audios regularly, you will remember my saying, pretty much repeating from early September onwards when I got back from my cycling holiday, just saying that things looked bullish, and then repeating that my best case scenario was that the global stock market rally would run well into the first quarter of 2005. Best case scenario, global stock markets do well, well into the first quarter of 2005. Well, we are 2 months and two months and 10 days through that first quarter of 2005, and I'm getting distinctly nervous. Now, first, about that comment, that time frame, say from early September onwards, I've been mentioning it. That is, of course, a guess, as is any forecast. But it's a guess based on more than just a sort of seat of the pants inspiration or hunch. It ties in with what I've seen in terms of medium-term runs and what I in secular bear markets. And it also ties in with developments in the first year of a new presidential term, more often than not. And it also tied in with my expectations regarding the Fed and rising interest rates. But that's it, no more. And it was a guess, it was a hunch. But here we are, say 2 months and 10 days, and I don't like what I see in terms of a number of lead indicators. Now, if I say today, absolutely here today, is it all over for these markets? The short answer is no. The slightly longer answer is, well, probably not, but I see too many ending signals that concern me a lot. And the one that worries me most is the recent rise that we've seen in long-dated government bond yields. Now, some of those have been taking place for a while, and I have to spend a moment here to discuss those and try to put them in perspective. You've heard me say over and over again that rising yields, and particularly the long-dated government bond yields, have killed off more bull runs than any other factor that we've ever seen. That's just that is a plain fact. But when does that kick in, that negative effect? For instance, one of the markets that I've been following and emphasizing, I should say, I follow them as many as I can, but I've been emphasizing, is Australia. Also New Zealand, but Australia and New Zealand is as lead developed country markets for this cycle. Now, the Australian 10-year government bond market, in terms of prices, actually peaked back in December. And we have seen yields again back upwards. But, as you know, that did not cause the Australian stock market to unravel. But there's a point at which the rising interest rates will have a very negative effect, and the more that Australian government bond market deteriorates, the closer we come to that point when all of a sudden the stock market comes down with a whoosh. One reason why I think, well, no, I'll give me finish that point. One reason why I suspect that Australia has done so well is, of course, because of the resources plays that have been a hot theme, and predictably so, in terms of this cycle, and I think will remain so over the long term. In other words, they're the supply and elasticity markets, and I maintain that those are all in secular bull markets. And also, another factor is that when those long-dated government bond yields start to move up, we very often see a period during which money, particularly speculative money, comes out of the bonds and goes into the equities, understandably, because of the differing performance trends. And that period can be anything from a few days to, oh, say, up to 6 months or so. I would be surprised, or I wouldn't hold out big hopes for 6 months, because that's the exception rather than the rule. Now, other bond markets, we have seen peak recently, or they were range bound. Our government bond markets, the things that I'm looking at would include the US, obviously, and the Euro bunds, UK gilts. They peaked in February. And I'm pretty sure that's certainly the case with the US government bond markets. Now, if you looked at the 10-year Treasury, you could say, well, a few months earlier there was a high that was slightly higher than the February high, but basically it was just range bound. So I'm talking about last month's high. And yields have been going up rather persistently, as you know. In other words, government bond prices coming down rather persistently. Now, incidentally, today there was a bit of reprieve in terms of those rising yields following government bond prices. The market was weak earlier today. Some data came out that on jobs that supported the market, and I think the number of people claiming benefits, so on, had gone up, and that supported the government bond market. Then it came off, moved to the negative, then moved to the downside again. I'm talking about bond futures prices, but then rallied up and closed up here 14:30 seconds on the 30-year Treasury. That's nearly half a point. So a little bit of a reprieve there, and also oil, which has concerned me a lot. The oil price actually fell back in here today on stories that there was sufficient supply. So oil still running into resistance near that former high up in the just over the $55 region, and oil closed down with a bit of a dynamic here at 53.56. It's not enough to make me feel that we're going to go back down to $40. I don't expect that at all. But it's enough to cause the oil market to perhaps range around here a little longer before it goes higher. That's my best guess at the moment. So a little bit of reprieve on those two points. And therefore, if you've had a chance to read Comment of the Day, you'll notice that I put out some hedge shorts in the Italian MIB index and also in FTSE. Now, these were not aggressive sales. They were initial positions to hedge against my long positions and to take advantage if we saw any further downside on stock markets. You can read about those positions, look at the charts yourself, so I'm not going to go into too much detail. I'm probably a little early here, especially in light of what I just mentioned about the bond market rallying a bit and the oil price coming off. I hope I'm a bit early because I want to give people time to think about all this and digest it and so on. I also said that my dilemma, one of my dilemmas here, is that I wasn't sure what I would actually be selling, but I do feel that I really do need to start concentrating on this point of raising cash in here. Now, other long-term points that I've made regarding stock markets before I move on from there is to say that Japan's very much my favorite stock market for the very, very long term by virtue of the fact that Japan's bubble had peaked in 1990, whereas Wall Street's bubble didn't burst until 10 years and 3 months later. And that I felt that, and the charts support this feeling, that we were very much in a base formation, extended base formation development, a predictable development for Japan, and that they were not far away from actually completing that base. Now, if Wall Street just manages to range, I think Japan will complete that base fairly soon. And what's completion? You might well say, well, I think probably more people will be watching that Nikkei 225 index, a little bit like the focus on the Dow and the S&P in the US. So a clear break above 12,000 that holds, that would provide, well, it would certainly increase interest in Japan even further, and interest has certainly picked up in the last few weeks during this rally. Now, there is almost no chance that let's say Wall Street deteriorates. There's almost no chance that I would, for instance, switch out of Japan in terms of some, but what are for me living in a sterling zone, pound cost averaging contributions, monthly contributions in a corporate pension scheme, for instance. I probably won't disturb those long-term positions. First, Japan hasn't had any big overextended move overall, and so on. So I don't doubt that if Wall Street really took fright, that Japan would come back as well. But again, I can hedge that if I If I wish to, I would be far more concerned about the high-flying developed and emerging markets, developed country and emerging markets, in the event of that sharp sell-off on Wall Street. And I do feel that we will see a sharp sell-off probably this year, and it could well carry well into 2006. I suspect we'll probably get a significant reaction low in 2006, but we'll see. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself at this stage. So really, to try to clarify that question, that very good detailed question from a subscriber who obviously listens very closely to my audios, how can we reconcile the fact that markets such as Japan and my bullish overall view regarding emerging markets, how do we reconcile that with the Wall Street leash effect? If any developed country market is going to have a low correlation or a lower correlation with Wall Street, it's going to be Japan. That would be point number one that I would make. The emerging markets, I think they're getting nailed when Wall Street really does take fright. But you know my view, whereas Wall Street, I would not be surprised to see Wall Street go back and test its lows that we'd seen back in 2002, within certainly in the NASDAQ index to do that within the but well before the end of 2006. Well, that would not surprise me at all. My feeling is that those high-flying emerging markets, take a market like India, for instance, or Brazil, that I don't think that I certainly wouldn't expect the 2002 lows to be tested. So, in other words, you get a big shakeout, but we will almost certainly see a higher low following that medium-term correction, and could be a considerably higher low relative to the 2002 low. And when Wall Street steadies again, in other words, the leash effect, it will be letting out, putting lots of play in the leash, then I would expect markets such as India and Brazil to the Eastern European markets to push up to new high ground all over again. If there are any exceptions among that group, it'll be because of big concerns over governance. But those would certainly be the exception rather than the rule. So I hope I've made that point clear. And I know a number of people are interested in China. It was one investor who'd raised the question, talking about baby stepping into China. I would just and mentioning that a number of technicians had said that it had broken a major downtrend, or words to that effect. China broke a medium-term downtrend, and I commented on that, I think, early on when that process had occurred. I pointed out some Dupper dynamics that checked the overall decline. It hasn't broken the long-term downtrends, but I'm not overly concerned about that. My main point is, if you're going to buy China, it's better to buy after a setback. And you could argue that since it's still in an overall long-term downtrend, you can certainly fairly argue that it's a heck of a lot cheaper than it was. And I don't doubt that if we're going to play China, that FTSE Tsinghua, if that's how it's pronounced, China 25 index symbol FXI, it's on the in the comment of the day. That's probably a good way to do it, to use that iShare. I feel that as far as investing in China, bottom line here, I'm not really happy about investing in the stock markets of communist countries. But the key point is that you will do well if they want you to do well. And from time to time, no doubt they actually will. In other words, that the government will have a much, much bigger influence on what happens with that stock market than actually would be the case in other countries. But as a general rule, and I've said this on a number of occasions, I feel that where you have communist regimes that, or quasi-communist regimes, or where you have, let's say, authoritarian capitalism, then I'm always a bit suspicious of those stock markets, unless there's the promise of democratization, or if a democratization is being introduced. It's not surprising that when people felt that Russia was well on the path in terms of democratization and would continue to make democratic reforms, that the stock market did one heck of a lot better than it's done since people said, "Oh, wait a minute, maybe we're going to see less democratization in Russia, and we're actually getting a rollback to much more of a an authoritarian type of situation." Okay, I don't want to make this audio. Don't want you to be listening all day or all night to this thing. So I to wrap up on some of these points. Now, another one that I want to make is that subscriber who said, "I'd appreciate your comment on the possible impact we would see in the metals and energy markets if there was some type of dislocation in the major stock markets, particularly the USA." Okay, so let's say hypothetically the US stock market falls out of bed. Big decline. I'm not talking about a few downward dynamics. I'm not talking about a decline of a few weeks. I'm talking about a major sell-off. And as I say, I think that there's a very good chance that we will see that between now and the end of 2006. Now, in that event, I would expect any market that has had a major move on the upside, that would include the oils, that would include the metals. I'm talking about not just metal shares, but I'm talking about metal prices. I would expect to see some dramatic shakeouts in those sectors. Now, why? Because I think the psychological implications, big sell-off on Wall Street, people will start to talk about a crisis, they will start to talk about global recession or global deflation, which may or may not be right, but they will certainly worry. Now, my feeling is that we're not likely to see that major sell-off on Wall Street without deterioration in the bond market. In other words, a significant fall in U.S. government bond prices. We haven't seen that yet, although they've come down pretty steadily over the last month. But that's not a major fall, obviously. So, major fall in the U.S. bond market, major rise in long-dated government yields. That's going to make the carry trades, whether it's dollar carry trades or other carry trades, it's almost certainly going to make them, well, it will make them quite a bit more expensive. And so that will add to concerns. Rising long-term interest rates are not good, or rising short-term interest rates. Those are not good for leveraged plays in commodities. So I would expect all markets to be hit. The timing sequence, that might not be an exact overlap, probably wouldn't be, but they certainly would be hit. And you can see how people would extrapolate. They'd say, "Oh my God, Wall Street's falling very sharply. Therefore, the U.S. economy must be in trouble." It may or may not be, but I'm talking about the psychology here in terms of the markets. And they would say, "Now, what else is going to happen? If the U.S. economy is in trouble, that means the consumers will be saving rather than buying. That's good for the long term, but that's very bad for the short term. Who will be hurt most by that? Well, that's going to be China. Oh my goodness, China is the country that's been buying all these raw materials," and so on. So you can see that you get a domino effect taking place. Okay. So, my feeling, again, to try to bring some of this to a conclusion here, global stock markets really late in the cycle, getting quite dangerous. I am not going to hang around, hopefully, until the very last moment, and I don't want to be surprised. I really do need to concentrate now on raising cash. It's a bit of a dilemma because I'm not sure what to where to lighten, but I should start really with speculative leveraged positions that I have. Hopefully there's time to be lightening in strength, and there's a good chance that there will be time to do that. But I don't know any more than anybody else around the globe whether first, there's no guarantee that I'm going to get this major correction, although I feel quite strongly that this is a serious risk. But you're obviously hearing or reading comments from other people who just are saying that's not actually going to happen. So it's not etched in granite, in other words, just to be realistic about it. But I will proceed on the basis that this is actually going to occur. But even if I'm right on that, neither I nor anyone else knows whether that will happen with a sudden meltdown, which is the most difficult type of situation to deal with, or whether we're going to get lots of thrashing around and failed upside breaks and churning, in other words, type 3 top characteristics. But I've reached a point now where I'm saying that the risks are rising at a rate that makes me uneasy. And I feel that they're rising relative to the potential for additional gains on the upside, and therefore I want to take some defensive action. Okay, what else to mention in here? I've covered the bonds, I think almost certainly, but I feel this is a secular bear market, but we're still in the overall top development stage. In terms of currencies, I don't believe that the dollar's bear trend is over, but I'm not in the dollar collapse school, as you know. And I've been more concerned really with monitoring the short term here, and it still looks to me as if the dollar is going to head down and test that 80 level once again on the US dollar index. And it will take some clear upward dynamics, or a clear upward dynamic, to check that slide and to provide an additional technical rally, which a whole lot of people have been forecasting, but not on the basis of the technical information that I'm monitoring at any rate and have illustrated for you. So I still do have some dollar short positions in the Aussie and the New Zealand dollar. I've talked about probably adding to those. I haven't done it yet, although I've had an opportunity here in the last couple of days. But I'm really thinking more about deleveraging rather than increasing leverage. Take a more cautious, conservative stance. Precious metals. Gold's action's been very good in here, 442 and a bit as I speak in after hours trading. This is good technical action, and I think it would take a clear downward dynamic to check this upward progression towards the previous high up in that 455, 456 area. And I think it's highly unlikely that we would see that downward dynamic without a major upward dynamic in the US dollar index. Silver, the proxy, continue to trade on a baby steps basis, and I would expect that to outperform gold on the upside as well as on the downside, as we've seen before. Palladium, a little bit of profit taking here today, very much type 3 base formation development. I think it's an interesting situation, but very much the laggard. Platinum flirts with that lateral resistance, but hasn't been able to break it as well. That resistance up in the 880, 890 dollar region. But as long as it doesn't get a bungee jump to the downside, which it's seen previously from that level, and the lows have been rising over the last few months, I think we will get an upward break, and that will be good for palladium as well. If not on the first few days, certainly over subsequent weeks when we get, and I think it's a when rather than an if, a sustained upside breakout on palladium. What would cause me to postpone that forecast or say that no, that's off the table in terms of the short to medium term? Well, the significant correction on Wall Street, but that would have to we'd have to see some really marked deterioration here, such as take out last month's lows for just mere starters. Okay, and oil, the long-term charts look awfully bullish. Short-term, we're still encountering some resistance up at these levels, and that hit pulled back natural gas in here today as well. But I think those are in secular bull markets, albeit quite volatile. Lastly, the agricultural commodities. I think this is their turn in the sense that a lot of speculative money looking around saying, well, what hasn't moved yet? And very depressed agricultural commodities in this environment are certainly attracting interest, and all it takes is a whiff of fundamental information to encourage the speculators, and they can produce some quite big moves on the upside, as we've seen in the grain and bean complex, particularly the bean complex recently. Okay, that's it, folks. I'm away tomorrow. But be back in the chair, as it were, the hot seat, on Monday. And meanwhile, all the best to all of you, and have a fantastic weekend.